Malcolm Honlein with us, Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. We call this the weekly update here at JM in the AM. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to JM in the AM.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
As you informed me off the air, we are just about a bit more than an hour away from the Prime Minister of Israel addressing the General Assembly of the United Nations. Now, obviously, he's done this before, certainly many times over the last few years. Today is obviously going to be very different. And I know you don't like to predict, but I'm curious if you have an impression of what direction he's going to go today and what the reaction might be in the halls of the UN to him today.
So the first thing we have to look at is who's going to be in the hall, which countries' leadership is still there, and how many of them attend, how many empty seats there will be, how many countries will boycott, which I anticipate will happen. And I don't think it will impact him. I mean, he's coming with the intent of delivering a message, and that's why he would leave the country at this time. And he's going back tomorrow night, so it's not, there's no other opportunities really for meetings. I will see him today. We have a meeting later on, but he will be leaving right after Shabbat. And the purpose is to be able to send a message to counter the lies and distortions and misrepresentations, which are so common to the UN, and especially now when you see the vote last week of 43 abstentions and only 13 countries voting with Israel.
Yeah, 124-14, right?
14, and one should acknowledge those 14 countries, including the Czech Republic, the few that stood up with Israel at this critical time, the United States, of course. But the fact that most of the Europeans hid behind an abstention, and France even voted for the resolution. Yeah. I think we have to do a lot of rethinking after this about, you know, who our friends are and who are not, because that resolution is potentially very dangerous in setting the guidelines, including that Jews should evacuate all of their Israel, should evacuate all of the territories, including East Jerusalem. So Netanyahu, I think, is there to lay out the goals and remind the people of how this started, that Hezbollah has been firing on Israel with more than 8,000 rockets before the attacks in Ernst and that Israel responded to. They've done such an amazing job. They've completely compromised their intelligence operations. They've destroyed a lot of the stockpile of weapons. And you see the lower number of launches as a result of all the factors of the attacks. And they, we're only at initial stages because Hezbollah's infrastructure is so deep. The tunnels underneath the southern Lebanon, northern Israel border have not even been addressed. What we're dealing now with is stuff on the surface and trying to force them back beyond the Litani as a first step. And hopefully we will see, continuing, that Iran is not rallying to the defense of its ally. If we don't see shipments of weapons because they've been eliminated, and also because they don't know who to talk to. The pager system is down, they tell me, and even the walkie-talkies have somehow disappeared. So it's a critical moment, and I think he has to show that Israel will stand up when you get 250 rockets in a single day, as we did this week. Israel didn't want this war. People should be reminded they didn't ask for this war. Hezbollah started firing on October 8th. So it was not a party to this. It joined. It has sustained that effort all along. And the 60 to 70,000 people who had to leave their homes, and how much destruction. You don't see it because, you know, there aren't reporters up there showing every day destruction of what Hezbollah has been doing all throughout this year. So that's the background.
We'll get to Bibi in a second again. You mentioned up north, of course, and we're so concerned about what's happening up there. The call up, unless, again, it's very possible, in all seriousness, it's very possible that, you know, the people in certain communities are just familiar, you know, with certain communities, and meaning communities around the world are familiar with communities in Israel. And it may be a coincidence that it seems that so many people that were somehow associated with were called up to the reserves this week. I don't know if you got the same feeling, but there was one day where it was nonstop in terms of me hearing about those reservists, you know, those soldiers who were called up, and obviously we're anticipating that there's going to be more action up north. Now, I don't know if any of this matters, that Rosh Hashanah is coming up, that Sukkot is coming up. I don't know how they view this time of year militarily. It may be completely irrelevant, which I understand. But as you explained to us last week, it seems that anything you just described that needs to happen from Israel's military point of view is going to require an intense amount of manpower. And I guess that both Israel and now we have to prepare ourselves for the inevitable, that there's going to be a major operation, a ground operation accompanying all these strikes by air, that's going to take some length of time, and it will make Gaza pale in comparison in terms of how vast the operation is. Is that where we're at?
Well, the mobilization is taking place. Troops have been moved from Gaza north. I know people as well who have been called up or whose children have been called up. And I think the Israel has to be prepared to be able to launch a war, because you cannot leave this half done. We've done it too often. And I can tell you, the Arab leaders we met with this week in private conversations, not in their remarks to us, the prepared remarks, I should say, all of them say, decimate them. You got to finish it. Because if not, we all become the victims. Do you know that the celebrations in Syria about when after Israel pulled off the amazing thing with the pagers, et cetera, and when they started hitting Hezbollah, they hate them. And they remember the brutality that was visited upon them. People in Lebanon itself, I got calls right afterwards telling me, and from a leading journalist, not obviously a Muslim, telling me that he went out in the streets and he saw two things. One was the television sets, because they thought that was the next thing to explode. So they all took their television sets out. And second, they were celebrating because they hate Hezbollah. They know what Hezbollah is. Here, it's glorified. Here, we make them into freedom fighters. Here, we don't describe them as the terrorists. You know, even sometimes Israelis, they call them, that they killed some operatives. They're terrorists.
Yeah, but by keeping their mouths shut at the United Nations this week and not saying publicly what you just said they're saying to you privately also hurts the effort.
Well, of course, and I raise that point very strongly and tell them, you know, what they're about it, and that when they are in trouble, they want everybody to stand up and speak up. So some of them tell us that, you know, there's a lot more going on privately, et cetera, et cetera. But that doesn't matter. Here, the world judges by that number, that vote, even though the UN's relevancy, they all admit, is marginal. But as a voice of condemnation of Israel, that could lead. These things can lead to the next step. That's why you cannot dismiss any of these measures. The PA, which doesn't enjoy the support even of a half of their citizens. In fact, in the latest polls, Fatah gets much less support, both in the West Bank and in Gaza, than Hamas. And the old guy comes up here, and all of a sudden they rejuvenate him, Abbas, and make him as if he's some sort of a leader still, when he doesn't control virtually anything. Yeah. So you're absolutely right. This is
he's a king on First Avenue, and he's nothing back home.
And we should take seriously these measures and these condemnations. And when speaker after speaker gets up and demanding a ceasefire now, a ceasefire now accomplishes nothing. And the demands on Netanyahu today will be very great. And they will say that he agreed. He did not agree to a ceasefire. How could they agree to something like that when Hezbollah continues to fire rockets in unlimited numbers and has a huge stockpile and will regroup? And all they need is time, because they need to rebuild all their infrastructure of communications amongst their leadership. So many of the top leaders have been wiped out. And I know people... and I hear it from people saying, yes, but so they'll replace it with somebody else. No, you just can't in a war replace the leadership, the guys, even the commanders of the different units who have been taken out. You can't just replace them. And they have the experience, they have the knowledge and access. And so these things are a devastating blow. That's the time you go after Hezbollah and dismantle it. That's the time you finish the job.
Right.
You didn't do it.
Right.
And if you remember, Nachum, Israel and Lebanon, essentially Hezbollah, signed a deal at the U.S. is urging for the Gaz to give them the permission to drill in off the coast. And right. Israel made concessions, territorial concessions in terms of water rights. But we promised that would bring a period of peace. 1701 was supposed to bring peace when they were supposed to not go beyond the Litani River. What did they bring? Nothing but a chance for them to rebuild, which is exactly what they would do now.
I think on the frustration level with, they could be replaced easily, I think more so that people are realizing what you and I said last week, and that is that there's just so many soldiers, there's so many operatives ready to step in. I get it, as you said accurately, they can't just step in and take on that role. But the fact that the potential is there and there's so many, we know they eliminate the top 11 or 13 of the top 15. Or whatever the statistic is. But then you realize, and again, until you go back and understand, these videos of Hezbollah, training young men, it's a big crowd. There are a lot of people there that are willing to give their own lives to kill Jews. And I think
they have tens of thousands still ready to do that. But remember, when Israel took out the Radwan leadership, In that amazing strike, the Hezbollah commanders who were killed, they were planning another October 7th. They were in the midst of planning it. So that one event not only beheaded leadership, but prevented another butchering attack. That's exact. They were the ones who actually came up with the model that Hamas preempted by doing it first. And the nature of what was going on in that meeting and the fact that they knew and that they saw what they wanted to take hostages again, that was prevented. So it's an immediate result and the long-term impact.
And I think people are also concerned, frankly, the war in Gaza is now almost a year old. And, if people start thinking and calculating, my gosh, if it's tougher up north and we're going to need a year or more, to obliterate the enemy there, people start to worry about what's happening with Israeli society and the toll that it's taking on everybody.
The most concern, of course, is the hostages.
Right.
And we have to always think about what they're going through. And we know that they're being held in inhumane conditions. But until Israel is able to really rescue them and the Hamas, like Hezbollah, they're not interested in a deal. They know that they will pay the price for a deal. And if the people of Gaza are ever really released and the people of Lebanon again, they will reject these guys because they've suffered under them. So we
fair?
Have to always remember the hostages.
Is it fair of the hostage families to publicly state that now that Israel is concentrating so much on what's happening up north, that they're abandoning their family members who are being held in captivity? I can't imagine that Israel would ever, really abandon them. I would imagine whatever operations they would love to conduct and do what you just described, they hopefully will be able to do. I can't imagine that they're, taking their foot off the gas of those efforts.
No, Israel's constantly working on it. Israel hasn't pulled out of Gaza. They continue to carry out operations in Gaza, and Gazans are beginning to change. And the hope is... I think 39% of Gazans said that October 7th was a correct decision now, which was much lower than it was before. And the support continues to decline. It doesn't mean anything because they're not having an election. That's going to matter. But first of all, remember that Iran is still pulling the strings on Hezbollah and on Hamas. This is an orchestrated campaign against them. We see the Hezbollah, the Houthis even still activated, let alone token shots from Iraq and from Syria. None of them are enthusiastic about doing this. The Houthis are, because they have no other existence. But we should remember that the situation on the ground is quite different than sometimes it's portrayed in the, or very different, certainly, than it's portrayed in the media.
Yeah, I get that. By the way, the New York Times says that Hezbollah perhaps has the largest arsenal of any armed group in the world, excluding governments. They are the largest arsenal of any non-governmental group, which is, you know, that's a sobering sentence to hear when, again, the impression has always been, at least from this side of the world, that, you know, Hamas and Hezbollah are somewhat equal in their capabilities. You've been telling us for a year now that it's not like that. Hezbollah is much stronger, and now you have the New York Times to back that. How do you like that? They're actually
once in a while they stumble on a truth, but I would say I would make one amendation. It's stronger. It has more than 95%, 98% of the governments of the world. Wow. Who has 150,000 missiles on launching pads and in condition to go? And now we find out from the explosions, and you notice that they're targeted. When 800 planes flew over Lebanon, you didn't see a report about a civilian casualty because there weren't. Did have civilians died now? Probably. And the numbers, of course, are not reliable from them. But Israel's actions are so surgical. Look at the reports from Hamas. After all the devastating, demeaning, and denigrating reports about what Israel is doing there, when every military expert who goes there objectively comes back, and not from not Jewish and not from America, from Europe, from elsewhere, and they say this is the most humanely fought war ever, that neither the British or the Americans or others ever executed wars in the same way as Israel has done, trying to and putting themselves at risk to avoid civilian casualties. Yeah. So, okay.
No, I hear it. Believe you me. It's America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listeners-sponsored digital radio. Around the world, the web at NahumSiegel.com and the Nahum Siegel Network, and, of course, the beloved NSN app. Support our Rosh Hashanah campaign by going to FJBUnity.org, FJBUnity.org, and I thank all the listeners who continue to support our work. I don't want to nitpick on the political stuff, but indulge me for a moment. Is it possible that Bibi was dangling this whole peace deal rhetoric all through the week because he was coming to New York, and when he gets back to Israel on Sunday, he'll change his tune?
No, I think he's made it clear now that he never agreed to this, and he doesn't agree to it, and that I don't know, what the machinations were internally, why this message came out, or why some Americans felt, officials felt that they had some sort of an agreement from Netanyahu. But the first thing he did on landing after the reports came out was to say that it was not true. And I think Israel would agree, but has to be under the right circumstances, which means really pushing them back from the Litani. We know that the UNIFIL troops are meaningless, and if anything, aid and abet the terrorists, the infrastructure that they have there. You'd have to destroy the entire southern part of Lebanon.
Which means what? Like, is it the bottom third of Lebanon? Like, how much area is it?
Well, take the area below the Litani, but it's really much more, because the range of the rockets they have now is much longer. What used to be that would have been enough to be a buffer zone and you get an early warning system. But today we know that they have enough of these of the longer range rockets, which they haven't even fired in great numbers, but a few. And they have, additional capacity, so that it may need to be something ultimately that would lead to the disarmament of Hezbollah. We don't see yet the courage on the part of the Lebanese army or ability on their part. You know, the last time there was a war, Hezbollah was not really part of the government. Today, they are the government in large measure and certainly part of it. So every target is legitimate. And Israel yet has not really tried to avoid destroying the infrastructure in Lebanon, except that support system for Hezbollah. So, we have to look at this in reality. We can't keep going back to another situation of a war another few years from now, when the power will only increase, the technology that they will have will only increase, And yet, you know, all the threats, you see again that Nasrallah's boisterous voice and stuff was not matched by performance.
That's right.
They can fire missiles. That's a coward's war.
That's right. They follow their boss, Iran. They behave the same way that night, right?
That's right. And now maybe the world will finally stand up, that we don't see any of these courageous voices that's in condemnation of Israel to say, oh, but we'll stand up against Iran and their threat to us. What do? They capitulate to it. The Gulf states, others, they all capitulate. They're all afraid of them. And you see that when you stand up to a bully, they back down.
Yeah.
And had we done this and not given $180 billion to Iran, if they hadn't been able to continue to supply, when you take out all of the stuff that Israel took out in Syria and in Lebanon, and you see the even the support groups in those countries have done minimalist stuff.
By the way, I mean, we know who ultimately protects the people of Israel. I get that. But still, you know, I don't know. What was it this week? I don't know what you said earlier, 150, 200 missiles in one day. And God knows how many could be launched at the same
time. 250 in one day.
And God knows how many could be launched at the same time. I mean, we can't minimize. Does Israel have enough? I don't even know what they are. Batteries, cartridges. Do they have enough of the Iron Dome to protect themselves from all this? I mean, sometimes we forget that this barrage needs a real defense response. And it's miraculous that Israel has the capacity and the actual material to be able to protect everybody.
I fully agree. I think about that all the time. You know, this tiny little country fighting on two sides, having to have ammunition, which is in short supply in the whole world, because Ukraine has eaten up a lot of it. There are other wars in Sudan, et cetera, that takes up supplies. And we have to credit the administration with defensive weapons, certainly the Iron Dome. Each time Iron Dome is fired, it costs up to $100,000. And, you know, some nights they fire dozens and dozens. And I always wonder how they don't run out of it. You can't supply them with enough. And second, munitions, Israel, United States just announced an additional package to Israel of $5 billion+.
So could you address the listeners who keep informing me about all the weapons that are being held back by the United States, Israel? Is any of that true?
Yes. There's truth on both sides. There are some weapons, and I base this on members of the Senate who are privy to the information, have said repeatedly that some of the bombs that can hit, they're not the full bunker busters, but they are mini, let's say, bunker buster bombs, and Apache helicopters, and the special tractors that can you know, they go in advance of the troops to uncover IEDs that are planted in the road. Those are three things specifically that were mentioned even this week in senators protesting to the administration about holding it up. And at the same time, the United States does continue to supply weapons to Israel. And we see other countries, Canada, for example, and I hope Canadians listen, are protesting to their government, have cut off sales to Israel. I spoke to German officials this week who denied that they have cut it off. I'm meeting the foreign minister of Germany today. I'll get more direct information. But you know that the French, the British, all of them are threatening or have diminished the sale of weapons to Israel. So America is their primary ally. And the fact that we still have all the ships and we're sending another carrier group back to the region, that certainly has been a deterrent, and they've helped in bringing down the attacks from the Houthis against Israel. Although you saw that one from one of the rockets launched by Yemen was taken down. It was aimed at Tel Aviv and was taken down over Israeli territory.
Unbelievable.
So, and they seem to have an unlimited supply also for some reason, although they've been greatly diminished. And what Israel did in the port of Hodeidah, which is their main port, they have not even reopened it now, all this time later, because the destruction was so complete.
Unbelievable. By the way, is it social media? I mean, I don't know what would have happened 20 years ago. You could tell me if you know, rumors would have swirled like crazy then as well. And maybe it is because of social media, which, and frankly, I excuse it if it is. But the rumors that they got Sinwar and they got this Hezbollah leader and the statistics about how many of the leadership of Hezbollah are now gone. Like, is there definitive information? Let's start with that. Let's start with Sinwar. There were strong rumors on the Internet about his demise this week. Do you know anything about it?
Well, to be very honest, he doesn't file his travel itinerary with us, with Israel. And you know, because of the underground tunnels, we know that he's been moved around, dressed as a woman in other guises. There were reports that he was smuggled into Egypt. There were reports that he got out to other places. The best information that's available today is he's still there underground. But, you know, it's very hard to track it because you don't know unless they appear in some datable video that tells you where he is.
But when you see charts on social media of 13 Hezbollah leaders and, you know, X is through 11 of them, are those reliable reports?
Yes, it's absolutely reliable. Israel, if it comes from Israeli sources, they are very careful sometimes too careful, I think, giving the facts and reporting. But those, and people should realize that when you take out those leaders, you are destroying the infrastructure within the system. Right. You can't just plug somebody in the middle of a war. And because their communications ability are limited, they don't have really people to replace. They will eventually, and they get new recruits. We know that. But they cannot replace these people. And the fact that Israel still operates on a targeted basis, meaning that they try to still avoid large-scale destruction and civilian casualties, warning people to get out, which means the terrorists get out amongst them also.
By the way, we heard it was a difficult week for the young man in Iran. Is that accurate information?
Regrettably, I think it is accurate information, although it's hard to get confirmation. But it appears that the judge dismissed the appeal, and I mean, efforts are still underway and we're not giving up, but it appears that the judge did not accept the appeal, which would have set aside the execution. Until now, it hasn't happened, thank God, and we hope we can still prevent it. We may have to, you know, do more public campaign, but for now, there are a lot of efforts underway, both by the community there and by friends elsewhere to reverse the decision.
So those listeners who ask about keeping him in their prayers, the answer is obviously
100%. Right.
So we spoke about up north, and obviously we spoke about Gaza and the hostage situation. Plus, as you said, you're going to be meeting with Bibi later today after his UN speech, which is going to be interesting. It starts at 9 a.m. Eastern time, everybody, by the way. But can we talk about Yudan Sharmon for a moment? Because it's been an interesting last few weeks there, and the Israeli military has certainly isolated certain neighborhoods in Jenin and otherwise in order to take out potential terrorism. Have they retreated? Is Israel still conducting operations there, or have those ended?
They have not ended. They're less visible, but some of the troops were removed from those operations to be brought elsewhere. But no, they are continuing, and unfortunately the other side is continuing too, and they still uncover parts of this vast network that has been created, again, telling us how much has been going on. All the factories they've uncovered, the stockpiles of weapons, the terrorist infrastructure, the plans to carry out kidnappings, and the fact is that periodically the shootings that have taken place, but they go in and they try to eliminate the sources of it. The PA clearly does not do its job, the PA police, et cetera, although it seems they get out of the way for Israel to do the dirty work for them. But just think, if Israel hadn't acted preemptively, if Israel hadn't done this, we would have had a third front in the heart of Israel. We see the repeated attempts to kill, but you know, they always say it's an individual, but those individuals are part of a much larger network. And I think that they preempted what could have been a great tragedy.
So, I mean, in reality, though, anybody who's heard this conversation would say Israel really is fighting a three-front war at this point. Three ground wars. It may not be an official ground war up north yet, but, I mean, based on the way you describe things, it seems inevitable. And we have seen what's happened over the last year with great concern about Israel's soldiers and its capacity to carry out these missions. I mean, I guess you know what it is. I guess it's just after we got lulled into such a sense of security after all these years, I think there's just, you know, somewhat of a fear. I don't want to say panic, but somewhat of a fear about whether Israel's military could handle all of this, because now this is a multi-front war that doesn't seem to have an inevitable ending at the moment.
But it's not three fronts. You got to take into account Israel's operating in Syria. in and as much on the ground as they are in Lebanon. I mean, bombing, and there have been the raid that they did where troops landed actually from the helicopters, and amazing. And because so many amazing things are happening, they don't even get the full recognition. But they never landed the helicopters. They were rappelled down, blew up this huge facility that Iran stored weapons and manufactured weapons there, because Israel's been effective in preventing shipping to a large degree. And they're fighting in Iraq against Iran and forces in Iraq, in Syria, in Lebanon, in Gaza, in Yemen, and the biggest, of course, from Iran. And then you have operatives crossing from into Jordan. You have operatives who, you know, can come from the, I mean, you have missiles that have come from all of these countries to Israel. So Israel has to be on alert on all of its borders to prevent and to counter any attacks.
Bob, and before I ask you for your Rosh Hashanah message, after all, it's our final conversation on the air for 5784. Could you just tell me if you have any additional agita over this period of time, meaning that, you know, it's really strange in Washington now. You know, he is President Biden, but obviously there's a major transition's about to happen. Then you enter that period of time, November, December, where, you know, no one's really officially president yet. You know what I mean? This is like that type of period of time and on steroids. Does that bother you more than, you know, the usual fears you have about America's reaction to what's going on in the Middle East, or not?
You froze.
Oh, I said, does that bother you more than, does that bother you in terms of wondering how Washington's going to handle things in the Middle East between now and January 20th, or not more than usual?
No, it does more than usual, because I think a lot is unpredictable, and we don't know. There could be other changes made. There could be a lot of things happening in the interim period that could change stuff. We don't know what the outcome will be in terms of the next Congress, which is equally important, and people focus all the time.
Remind people to vote. There's so many key races.
And vote down the ticket. They got to vote. Yeah. And if you don't like what the candidates for president, still vote for the Congress. It's so important. Yeah. And you know, we have to remember that the Congress can hang in the balance of one election, and that election can hang on the balance of a couple hundred votes. So people, please get their vote and make sure, you know, can do early voting now. Get your votes in. It's so important.
Go ahead. Did you ever think Erdogan would have an effect on New York City politics?
that's very funny. Well, not to everybody, I guess.
Right, that's
but,
true.
But, you know, Erdogan never fails to surprise us. He's a, you know, he is Muslim Brotherhood. He's a radical. I've had the opportunity to meet him many times, and he's a dangerous character, and I think sometimes borderline on his normalcy.
Because of the uncertainty. You've described this to us already. It's because of the uncertainty. You never know what he's going to do or say. And that's what makes him, you know, so dangerous, frankly. Malcolm 5785 begins Wednesday night. Hopefully our hostages, our brothers and sisters, will not be in captivity at that time, but we are assuming the worst for the moment. Obviously, this year begins very differently than last year. What are your thoughts on this final on-air discussion of this year?
Well, for one thing, I hope everybody will remember all the karbanos of this year. Of course, the hostages first, but also those who paid the price. We all saw the pictures daily. It breaks your heart. Fathers, women who've been killed on the line of duty defending the Jewish people, the Jewish state, the Jewish future. It's all of our wars, and people shouldn't think about this as a separate entity. When you're dominating for your family, they are your family, all of them, and all of those who will be standing on the borders and blowing shofar along the borders of Lebanon and Syria and in Gaza. They are our family. You know, we say, and in fact, the references in the davening on Rosh Hashanah, that, you know, a carbon is consecrated because of a man's designation of it. The land of Israel becomes holy because of what we do.
Right.
HaKadosh Baruch Hu set it aside. Now is the time when we are re-sanctifying the land of Israel and showing that we appreciate it, that we care about it. And our tefillahs this year have to be so intense and so directed, and realizing after all the anti-Semitism that we have experienced, and it's not going away. I mean, we should have spent the show also talking about that and some of the new information we're getting about what's happening in elementary schools and high schools, the hatred against Israel and against Jews that is being promulgated in public schools across the country, that the challenges to us are almost unlimited. But we have the strongest ally in the world. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that while he relies on us to do our part, we obviously rely on him. But we have to make ourselves worthwhile and worthy of the interventions that come from him. So I hope everybody, you know, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises to bless us. The Harbar says, he will make us plentiful and he will bless us. Well, so many times we see it in davening, but it's not something that's an automatic. It's something that we all have to do. And we all ought to think about what we're ready to give up, what we're ready to do to match the heroism and the sacrifices the people of Israel are making every hour, every day, for a year now.
Well said. Much appreciated. Wishing you and your family a happy, healthy, and sweet new year. And please, God, we'll speak in 2 weeks on Erev Yom Kippur.
Well, we'll talk about it.
Oh, right. I shouldn't even assume that. Hopefully, we'll speak in 5785, please, God.
God willing.
Have a wonderful Shabbos. And again, Shana Tova Umetuka. Malcolm Honlein, he is with us every Friday. 7:40 a.m. Eastern Time. We call it the weekly update, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations.